Good morning. It's good to see everyone out this morning. Had a good study from Psalm chapter 119, and good to continue that. We've been doing that each service at 9 a.m. Next week we'll conclude that with the last part, starting in verse 120 of Psalm 119 through the end of the chapter, so looking forward to that. We will start in Ecclesiastes chapter 7, if you'd like to go ahead and turn in your Bibles or your devices to Ecclesiastes chapter 7. We'll start there in just one sec. But before we do, I've asked Brother Louis to direct our minds in a word of prayer. So we'll start with that and then we'll get started this morning. All right. So Ecclesiastes chapter 7 is where we'll start. Obviously, last week we didn't get super far in chapter 6. We did get all the way through it, which is good, but it was only 12 verses, so I'll be a little bit more ambitious this morning. We'll get as far as we can. As I've mentioned last week, this, where we concluded in chapter 6, this idea of, for who knows what is good for man. I think verse 12 of chapter 6 goes really well into setting the table for chapter 7. And so, just to refresh our minds, verse 12 of chapter 6, for who knows what is good for man while he lives the few days of his vain life, which passes like a shadow? For who can tell what? Who can tell man what will be after him under the sun? And as I mentioned last week, when we talk about setting the table, starting in chapter 7 through what I believe is really kind of a proverb form, verses 1 through verse 13 of chapter 7, contrasts this idea of wisdom and folly and uses the terms good or better over and over and over again. So hopefully you had a chance to reread that and kind of look at some ways of what is good, what is better. As the preacher here, again, as we believe it to be Solomon, contrasts this idea of something that is wise, something that is foolish, and what it's better for, or what is good to do here. This idea of good corresponds, again, to certain parts of Proverbs chapter 22 and others. I believe chapter 7, 1 through 13 really reads as a proverb itself, and you may have even the margins kind of smaller in your Bible or in your device. And so I believe it kind of lends itself to that there. So let's get started. We'll do 1 through 13 here. And again, like I said, I don't know if I've gotten past 20 verses yet, and we've got 29 in here, so we'll get as far as we can. 1 through 13, I'll get two readers again, 1 through 6 and 7 through 13. So if I can have a volunteer, maybe someone who hasn't volunteered in the past. Louis, 1 through 6 and then 7 through 13. Cindy, okay. 1 through 6, Louis, and then 7 through 13, Cindy. All right, so we're in Ecclesiastes chapter 7. Just read verses 1 through 13 of Ecclesiastes 7. And there is a lot here. I think I've said that quite a bit, but it's definitely the case. This is one, I would say, maybe Ecclesiastes chapter 3, some of part of chapter 2 towards the end of the book, as Gail had done a lesson from that last week. Along with those sections, chapter 7 is utilized a lot. It's mentioned a lot in lessons. I'm sure that we have read it before. Hopefully we've read it before. If not, it's very powerful if you've read it for the first time or for the 30th time. And a good name is better than precious ointment. We won't stop on every single verse because, again, then I'll never get through, which is okay. But a good name is better than precious ointment. I said it borrows itself or lends itself a little bit to other parts of the Old Testament. Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 1 says, a good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, and favor is better than silver or gold. And I believe that this goes very well with that. In this case, it's the contrast here is a good name is better than precious ointment, and the day of death better than the day of birth. And it's that phrase that really goes into the next section, okay? And obviously that makes sense, right? As we're reading through, one thing should go right into the next. But oftentimes in Ecclesiastes, it's that first verse that really, again, for lack of a better term, sets the table for what's to come. We did that in chapter 6, okay? Talked about this grievous evil, or in this case it just said evil, and then we went into what the problem was. Okay, I'm going to tell you there's an issue, here's the issue. In this case, the good name part starts out and it's like, okay, it's going to go in one direction, but then it says, and the day of death better than the day of birth, and it's that sets the table or prepares us for what's to come, which is verses 2 through 4. As we look at that, and instead of reading each part, I'll take it as a whole. Obviously, 2 through 4 go together. You see this name, the phrase I said to watch out for good or better. We started with good. Verse 2, it is better to go into the house of what? Mourning, okay, than the house of feasting. Verse 3, sorrow is better than laughter. And verse 4 actually doesn't use good or better, but then we get back into better starting in verse 5. But as we take 2 through 4 here, there has been a lot said, written, taught about this section. Obviously, part of my job is to be able to go through, offer some thoughts, get your thoughts, because as I've said many times, the way I like to teach is to get a lot of thoughts, and y'all have done a great job of that. So I look forward to hearing your opinions of this, if you will, or again, of course, guided by the scripture. As we take this idea of going to the house of mourning, then to the house of feasting, one thought that has occurred, and again, this isn't just, I'm sure I'm not inventing this here, but what is the result of sorrow? When we go through tough times, when we go through adversity, what a lot of times is the end result, or what can be the end result? I guess there's two ways you can really go with sorrow, adversity. It can beat you down, it can weaken you, it can make you less than what you were before you went through that, or it can do what?
It can temper you.
Okay, I like that you used that phrase. It can temper you. The idea is it can not only make you stronger or build your defenses up more, you know, but it can what?
Strengthen your faith.
Okay. It can strengthen your faith. It can prepare you. It can make you ready for more adversity or other things that would come your way. Oftentimes when we go through tough times and adversity and trials, better things can result from that. And I think there's a reason why this says it's better to go through this. Now, it doesn't mean that that it's just we should always be in the house of mourning. One of the things that causes when you go through tough times, hard times, I'm going to use an example here. And again, I don't believe it's always this case. But if you literally look at it as the house of mourning and just say that you have a loved one that has passed away, something that many of us have gone through, that I've gone through this past week. When you have this, when you have someone that passes away and you're literally mourning, oftentimes it causes you to reflect upon yourself. It causes you to reflect on the life around you. And it causes you to reflect on life itself. Not just look inward, but literally look at the temporary, well, I'm going to invent a phrase, how temporary life is. Instead of just inventing a phrase, we'll just use actual English here. How temporary life is. And a lot, when we talk about going together, a lot of Ecclesiastes has been about how temporary life is. This phrase vain, as we go back to the very beginning of Ecclesiastes, oftentimes we say vain in this vein of someone being vain. And really when we use it in Ecclesiastes, it's this idea of a vapor. Okay, it's here and then it goes away. It's very temporary, and that's what we talk about over and over again here. So as we reflect, oftentimes when we're going through hard times or literally mourning over the loss of someone, we think about life itself, that life is fleeting, that possessions can disappear in the blink of an eye. And that's one thing that Solomon, as again we believe that Solomon here that's speaking, that he's mentioned over and over and over again. This idea of blessed are those that go through this. Any idea, and I use that for a reason, any idea of where that's mentioned again, as specifically at the beginning of the New Testament? I'm trying to lead in a certain direction. Blessed are they who, for they shall be comforted. Okay? It's something that's reinforced over and over again. Of course, blessed are they that mourn, Matthew chapter 5 and verse 4. When we look at this entire section, and again, I think we can go in many different directions, but really just at its face value, I understand as a human being that when I go through tough times, when I lose someone, when I am literally mourning, that oftentimes you can get real reflective. And when you're going through good times and everything's going great, oftentimes we don't stop. We've used the phrase stop and smell the roses. Okay. Now, usually that is, well, things are going so great, you know, just or maybe they're not going great. They're just going right. You're going. You just don't stop to smell the roses. Usually that's not used in a negative or mourning sense, right? But do we actually stop and smell the roses, or take an idea of what we have around us, take stock of our life? When we're going through tough times, that's really stopping to smell the rose, just understanding what's going on here, what we're going through, what's around us, who we have around us, what's our influences. So these two things go together. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by sadness of face the heart is made glad. And again, I believe it's this idea of reflection here. It leads into verse 4 because it says, the heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. And what I would take away from this is that foolish people oftentimes don't consider the seriousness of this life. Okay? I'll let that sink in a little bit. Oftentimes, when we are going through tough times, when we are mourning, when something bad happens to us, it causes not only to reflect, but to realize how serious this life is. And when we talk about how fleeting it is, it's easy to say, and it's hard to get our minds around that. And that's a serious matter when you realize that 2 minutes from now, I could drop dead. That's serious. That's not particularly happy. Now, it is happy if I'm in the right place, right? But that doesn't mean that it's easy to understand, that it's easy to grasp. And if you are a foolish person, chances are you probably don't think about that a whole lot. You may not reflect a lot upon how serious this life is or how fleeting it is. The fool itself, taken from this verse, talking about just being in the house of mirth all the time, they don't contemplate, life, death, and eternity. Now, I saw that phrase somewhere, and I would change that one way. I think they contemplate life, but the contemplation of life is, what can I get out of this life? It is living for this life, and it's living for this world. And it's those other two parts. I'm going to die, and that could happen at any time, and I better be concerned with where I'm going to spend eternity. It's those two parts that oftentimes do not go together with the rest of that phrase there as far as the heart of fools. 2 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 10, we won't go there, but it also plays into this concept of godly grief, okay? And I believe here when it talks about godly grief, especially in 2 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 10, that's in relation to sin. And I think that plays a part here as well. It's not just that someone has passed away and now we're mourning, but if we're going through something, if we have sinned, if we have a sorrowful heart, that can have a positive effect, right? If I'm going through sin and I'm living a sinful life, or I'm doing the same sin over and over, and I don't have a sorrowful heart, and it's not hitting me, and I'm not upset about it, then chances are I'm not going to what? Okay. I'm not going to change. I'm not going to repent. I'm not going to stop doing that. So I think there is a role, or that plays a role here. It's not just, well, someone has passed away, we're going through tough times and trials, and that is the house of mourning. The house of mourning can literally be, I have sinned, I have fallen short, I need to change my life around, I need to be upset about that, and have this idea of godly grief because of something that I have done, and that will lead to, hopefully, better things as I live my life. Okay. Before we move on to starting in verse 5, because again, I believe this goes to together here, any thoughts before we... Because again, when we're going through, and this can be things that have just had natural occurrences in our life, things that have happened, or this can be we've caused ourselves pain and decisions that I think it goes both ways there, that I can cause myself pain and grief in this life based on decision that I've made, or sometimes it's just things happen to us, they are tough, they are trials, and we can learn from that and grow from that. Yep. So I think some of the passages that talk about, okay, when you're accumulating, when you're laboring, it's good to toil, it's good to labor and be happy with that. I think that that is always corresponded with the multiple examples of, well, you did all this and you're still not satisfied. You accumulated all this and now you're worried about giving it to somebody else. You accumulated all this and now you're worried that you're not going to be able to enjoy it. You accumulated all this and you spoil it for everyone else. And that's always corresponded, or that's usually somewhere in the section of, you just need to learn to be about work, to enjoy it, and to enjoy all that. I think that that goes together with this. It's not that you, because this idea of the house of mirth is just, I want, I want, I want, I need, I'm pleasing myself. And when it talks about being happy with what you have and enjoying the toils of your labor, that is not a mindset of, I want, I want, I need. It's, I have worked for, I can enjoy, it's okay to enjoy that, but knowing that if things happen, if sorrow happens, that is not something that's just going to ruin your life. That's something that you can, I'd hesitate to use the word enjoy, but that's something that you can grow from. That's something that you should be thankful for, because it's going to make you be a better person, if we're talking about us, it's going to make you be a better Christian. When we go through these trials and tribulations, that should make us better. And that's why I think this phrase is used over and over again: sorrow is better than laughter. Again, I don't believe, and that's why I'm glad you phrase it like that. I don't believe it's literally, well, I shouldn't be laughing. I shouldn't be happy. Well, how does that go with the rest of the book? I shouldn't be pleased with what I've done, you know, and the work that I've put forward. I think it's just all about having context. And in this case, it is, if all you care about in this life is accumulating, I'm just going to do me, I'm going to be happy, I'm going to do whatever it is that makes me happy, that doesn't actually gel with just being satisfied with what you have, because that's really the best way to phrase it when you talk about this idea of I have toiled and be happy with that. That's this idea of being satisfied, or being, what have we said over and over again, a C word. And I'm glad you brought that, because, you know, like I said, I have ambitious, or I'm trying to be ambitious and get all the way there. I may not get there. What verse 14 does is, when we talk about this day of prosperity, what it talks about is God made both. And so I'm glad you connected the two of those there, because I may not remember to go back to that, because the idea is that it's okay to be happy in prosperity, but remembering that God made both. And it's not, well, when you're going through mourning and when you're going through tough times, that God has cursed you, or that all these bad things have been brought upon you. How could he possibly do that? It's like, no, God made both, and both are to be to our benefit. Not only days of prosperity, but also days of challenges and days of trials. That both of those talk about tempering and strengthening, and his idea, I can be strengthened by good times too. It's not that you can't. I think good things can come from good times. Let's not just gloss over all this and say, well, we should just always be upset and going through tough times, and if I'm not, then I can't be growing as a Christian or doing good things. Absolutely, you can. God made all of it, and he made both for our edification and for our growth. And that's why I use the phrase stopping to smell the roses, because usually we use that when you're just going. Oftentimes it's actually a positive. Things are going well, but you got to stop and look around and be thankful for what you have. Stop and smell the roses, realize what's going on. I think that can be used in this instance as well. Even when especially when things aren't going well, it does cause us to stop, take stock of what we have, what our situation is, where our soul is, and look inward and say, okay, my loved one just passed away, or something tragic just happened. Maybe the loved one person that you know, maybe they're not dead, they haven't passed away, but something tragic has happened to them, and realize, okay, this is how fleeting this life is. This is how difficult this life is. Where am I at? What is my status as a Christian, as a husband, as a father, as a friend? Where am I at? And I think that you can take and make an evaluation, a self-evaluation, in tragic instances and in sorrowful instances, and you absolutely can do that in positive times as well. But oftentimes it's harder to do that, I think, and I think that's why we're talking about this. That's why it talks about better is it to go into that, because I think it's especially hard when we're in that house of feasting and times are good to stop and take an evaluation and take stock of everything. Yes, sir. As we look through the second part of this, we will continue on, as it says, better in verse 5 for a man to hear the rebuke of the wise than to hear the song of fools. I think this goes directly to what I just mentioned in 2 Corinthians chapter 7. Here, I think we turn the table a little bit to rebuke of the wise, this idea of godly sorrow or godly grief or regret, because see here is that someone is being corrected. That's why the word rebuke is used. It's better to hear the rebuke of the wise than the song of the fools. If all you hear is positive, 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 and you're in an environment of you're good, your soul's good, even though in this scenario, it would be that you're not right with God, but everybody else is telling you, don't worry about that. Are you less likely or more likely to change if everybody tells you you don't have an issue? That's the easiest question you're going to get today, right? Probably not going to change if I don't think I have an issue, or maybe I'm wondering, but everybody says, no, you're good. However, if I know I'm not right, or even if I think I am, and somebody, I'll just give an example, look up obviously a lot to everyone, look very up a lot to Gail. If Gail were to come to me and say, because I would just shot in the dark, you're way wiser than I am, And so if you, trust me, so if you were to come to me and say, offer some advice or offer something, you know, I know that you're doing this, you should be doing this, let me show you in the scriptures where you're going wrong here, then I should be thankful for that. Now, I think there's a reason why it's phrased here. It's better to do that than to hear the song of fool. Am I going to be happier about being told I'm awesome or I've slipped up, I've messed up? That's an obvious answer. And most of the things that I give are obvious answers, right? For a reason, though. I think leading us in, I'll give you an example. One of the things I always think about, I was so blessed to have two parents that were very involved. My dad, just an excellent father. He was also one that was a close watcher of things. And he would correct a lot. And that's okay. And one of the things that I butted heads with him more than anything was when I grew up playing basketball. And I was in elementary school and I was playing basketball. And whether I played a game, practice, anything, he'd always be very praiseworthy, as he should. But more times than not, the first thing that I heard was some sort of correction, was some sort of suggestion. Again, we're not talking about rebuke here. We're talking about elementary school basketball or middle school basketball. But again, some sort of correction. Now, can you guess what my reaction usually was to that? Not a positive one, okay? Because oftentimes we don't want to hear rebuke, especially if I like praise. We all like praise, right? Now, again, let me be specific here. There was plenty of praise here. This idea, and that's just a silly example, but this idea is he was correct in his corrections. He was trying to make me better. In this case, he was trying to make me a better basketball player. Or if we correct our children, we're trying to make them better children. If we tell our children something, don't do this. Again, we're not just correcting to correct or rebuking to rebuke. We're doing that to what? To shape them, to mold them, to help them be what they need to be. So that is this idea here. But of course, it's the easiest question. We'd rather hear happy stuff all day long. And boy, you're just the best thing ever and you're just doing great. But that's just not reality. And I think that we, again, can do some self-correction in this. Whether we're going through this house of mourning, going through tough times or positive times, we need to always look inward as well and not just rely on others to correct us, okay? Because that may not always be the case. I love the phraseology here in verse 6. And boy, I'm going to fail miserably. We are 30 minutes in and I'm only to verse 6. But I love all the comments. This is fantastic. If we only get to chapter 9 through this class, that's okay. For as the crackling of thorns under a pot, love this, so is the laughter of the fools. This is also vanity. Now, before I mention something here, just a thought. Thorns, oftentimes, if you were going to use them, it's not something that I can relate to very much, but in the older times, you know, if you were to go to get it now, I guess you could find a thorny bush or something. What it would do is that thorns will fuel a fire even faster than what is already happening. But the key word here is faster, because it will fuel it very fast, and then what? Okay, and then it goes out. And that's what, because when I first read this, I'll be honest, that didn't mean a whole lot to me. Oh, great, crackling thorns under a pot. I can't really get my head around this, and that's why I think it's important to kind of stop for a second and realize it's a short blaze and it's soon over. Also, thorns themselves, when they're set on fire and when they're doing that, not only is it fast, but they will crackle. Okay? And I think that's also important. A foolish person oftentimes, because that's what we're talking about here, the laughter of fools, this is also vain. Or again, it's important here, vanity being looked at as fleeting or, you know, going away very quickly, is you picture a thorn, not only is it very fast that it burns out, but it's loud, it's popping around, and then it's gone. That's this idea of the laughter of fools. Boisterous. A fool is loud, noisy, making a lot of noise, but boy, that goes away quickly. All right? And as we look at this in a life perspective, is I'm just going to seek the satisfaction of this life. I'm going to go hard. I'm going to go loud. I'm going to get everything I can get out of this life. That is fleeting. That is vain. You can say literally in this case, that is a vain way to be, but all of that is very fleeting. And so for something that I've read before is just for a crackling of thorns, and that's awesome. I think it's super cool the way that is phrased there, because again, you get this idea of understanding what this life is, that yes, it is temporary, but also that we have to be balanced. And we will use that again when we get to the end of chapter 7, this idea of being balanced. In fact, there's a phrase that's used in at the end of this chapter where it talks about it's better not to have a ton of wisdom. And that's another one can be kind of a head scratcher later on. Better to be not really, really wise. It's this idea of being balanced and understanding perspective in all of this. So it goes into verse 7 now of chapter 7. And again, this idea of just a fool's life comes and goes very quickly. It's not that our own lives don't come and go very quickly, but it's what you do with them. Surely oppression drives the wise into madness, and a bribe corrupts the heart. Well, that's interesting. Because again, there's different verses, and that's why I like how Blythe was asking earlier, well, how does this go with this? We can say that a lot because we understand, we just talked about how the house of mourning and being in tough circumstances can shape us and strengthen us. And then we come right back with, well, oppression drives the wise into madness, and a bribe corrupts the heart. I think what we're talking about here is, and the reason why the word bribe is used, is potentially extortion. Potentially here, it's not just being oppressed or going through trials, because chapter 4 and verse 1 talks about, again, I saw all the oppressions that are done under the sun, and behold, the tears of the oppressed, they had no one to comfort them. On the side of their oppressors, there was power, and there was no one to comfort them. I think there we were talking about a scenario or a situation of literal oppression. Those that were having evil done to them, maybe physically, those that were going through physical trials. I think here, the reason why it talks about bribe corrupting the heart and it drives the wives into madness, I think it is potentially, again, just my thought, about maybe one being oppressed financially. Maybe it's through extortion. Maybe it's through blackmail. It's this idea of going through something that is affecting you. And again, like I said, potentially from a financial standpoint, better is the end of a thing than its beginning, and the patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Yeah, no, I appreciate you saying that, because I think that you could isolate it by itself and say, okay, well, you know, clearly someone is just going through something, or you could do, I think I like your way a little bit better, which is, if you connect the two of them in verses 7 and 8 into the whole context, we could absolutely take away this idea of, okay, well, the stuff that you're getting and the good stuff that you're going through and what you've accumulated, it gives you a false sense of hope. It gives you a false sense of who you are and where you are in your life, and that it too is fleeting. And you can understand that, well, it's better to get to the end of this than to be patient in spirit than it is to be that proud person of you've gotten it and it's just a bribe. So I like that a lot. It, again, when we talk about the patient in spirit, I think this can go to many different things, this idea of balance. Also, we've mentioned several times in the scriptures being slow to anger. Okay, Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 29 goes back to this as well, being slow to anger, listening. Have we mentioned that a few times in Ecclesiastes? Okay, it says, have you ever heard the phrase, slow your roll? Okay. I got one chuckle. Thank you. So this idea of sometimes and oftentimes when you talk about that, you're just flying off the handle, out of control, you know. But this concept really throughout all of this book and through this chapter is being balanced, being patient, not only in what we're going through, but being patient in spirit and having this concept and this idea of balance. We already mentioned, blessed are those who mourn. One verse before that in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 3, it said, blessed are those who are poor in spirit. Okay. And again, I believe that this all goes together here. When we talk about angry, in verse 9, it says, be not quick in your spirit to become angry, for anger, I love this, lodges in the heart of fools. Okay. Clearly, first thing that I thought of, at least, was James chapter 1 and verse 19, okay? James chapter 1 and verse 19 talks about, I'll just read it real quick. James chapter 1 and verse 19. That way I'm not paraphrasing and misparaphrasing here. James chapter 1 and verse 19. Know this, my beloved brothers, let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. For the anger of man who does not produce the righteous, for the anger of man does not produce the righteousness of God. Okay, this idea of being slow to anger, I look more to the second part of the verse. It lodges in the heart of fools. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 26 says, do not let the sun go down on your anger or your wrath. All right. So I think that that is very applicable. I know I'm not the first to mention this. I think it's been mentioned many times before. But one of the best bits of advice that I plan to give to my children, I don't know if my parents gave this directly to me, I know I've heard it before, and I'm sure you have, but this idea, especially as a married couple, of not going to bed angry, not going to bed with an issue, talking about things before you, not dwelling upon something, and oftentimes it's easy to use the idea of just going to sleep as the best example of this. So just make sure you don't go to bed angry, and more times than not, it's used about your, you know, a marital relationship or used in context of talking to your wife, making sure that you're communicating everything. I think one of the reasons, for starters, it's excellent advice, but if you don't cover something, that's why I love the phrase, lodges in the heart of fools. It would be foolish behavior to dwell on anger and let it to consume you, because it will do just that. It will literally lodge and stick with you. And if you think about something day after day and you don't fix it and you don't air what's going on, or if it's something that maybe that you're doing that's making you angry and you don't fix the problem, then what's going to happen? Bigger, because we use the term fester a lot, right? Let's say this idea of festering or growing, okay? It's going to continue to get worse. It's going to continue to, and as it does that, when fire starts, there isn't just an all-consuming fire when you just, unless you have a lot of dynamite or something, or a lot of gas on a fire, when you first start a fire, it starts out as just a flicker, right? And it's just an ember. And then it grows and it grows. And that's this idea here of anger lodges in the heart of fools and it continues to grow. Verses 10 through 13 here, it says, say not, why were the former days better than these? For it is not from wisdom that you ask this. Again, I think this goes back to something that we've mentioned before about the good old days. Solomon has already covered this over and over and over again about everything that has been, has already been. There's not going to be a time where we can say, okay, well, this has never happened before. This is totally different than what they used to go to through in the good old days. Or, well, times are really bad now, but I wish I could go back to the former days in the good old days. That's just not a wise concept, and it's not one that is accurate, because again, we go back to who made everything and everything coming from God. And that's the way we kind of stop here in verse 13. That's probably where we'll stop as we have about 5 minutes left. Verse 11, where it talks about wisdom is good with an inheritance and advantage to those who see the sun. There is an advantage to be had from being wise and from acquiring knowledge, especially, or most importantly, if the knowledge is from where? From above, okay? And if it's contained here or in your technological device, as long as it's on the Bible right now, okay? This idea of acquiring knowledge, acquiring wisdom through searching the scriptures, through prayer, through our life as Christians, there is an advantage to that. But that advantage is to be had and is had based on whom? God. We go back to it over and over and over again, because you can read this and isolate it and saying, all right, well, now he's back to saying wisdom's good. But at the end of this chapter, he's going to say, but don't get too much of it. I'm confused. The idea is that it's okay to gain this wisdom. You would much rather be wise than to not be wise. But all of that is from God and is an understanding and is gaining a wisdom and a knowledge that without him, I am nothing. Without him, I am doomed to fail. I am doomed to fail for all of eternity. That is what we hit at over and over and over again. And that's why we have to be so careful not to isolate certain things. Because if you isolate in this book, it can get Well, man, he just said that. That's why I liked what Blythe said at the beginning. Like, okay, well, how does that gel with the rest of this? And absolutely, you can go piece by piece here. But again, the overarching theme is always considering God. And that's how we get to the end of verse 13 here. Verse 12, for the protection of wisdom is like the protection of money, and the advantage of knowledge is that wisdom preserves the life of him who has it. Again, familiar theme here. That doesn't mean that your life will end up being what you want it to be, or that you'll end up where you need to be just from acquiring wisdom and knowledge, but acquiring the right wisdom and the right knowledge will help to protect and preserve your life. That doesn't mean that it will keep you from dying, that it'll make you live longer. How do I know that? Just read a few more verses past this. We're not going to get there. But if we were to get there, and I'll just, you know, jump ahead for a slight little bit. Verse 15, in my vain life I've seen everything. There is a righteous man who perishes in his righteousness, and there's a wicked man who prolongs his life in his evil doing. Well, how could that go together? Again, we get back to just because you're acquiring this wisdom and knowledge doesn't mean that your life is going to have some longevity because of it. It's knowing what we're preparing for. And it's preparing not for this life, but for eternity. That's what we're to be doing. Verse, how do we gain wisdom? How do we gain this knowledge? From study of the Bible, from prayer, from efforts that we're making in our lives. And again, I'm looking at I think we got about 3 minutes here. I think that's the first bell, right? So verse 13, consider the work of God. Who can make straight what he has made crooked? This lends itself back to chapter 1 and verse 15. Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and verse 15. What is crooked cannot be made straight. What is lacking cannot be counted. And even though it's not phrased the same way, chapter 3 and verse 11 of Ecclesiastes, that's after where it's talking about a time for everything. In verse 11, he has made everything, he being God, he has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity into man's heart so that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end. Maybe that was the second bell.
Doubled up.
Okay. Well, we still have 2 minutes because actually that clock's a little fast here. So in the last 2 minutes, what I would say is this familiar theme of consider the work of God, who can make straight what he has made crooked. It's understanding that as we go through and we say, okay, well, it's better to be wise than it is to be foolish. It's better to go through tough times. That sharpens us. That makes us stronger. But again, it's this reminder that God has made everything. God has made everything in my life what it's supposed to be. That's the good times. That's the bad times. That's everything in between. Everything has been done for a reason, and he has done everything for a reason. And I can't change that, nor would I want to. I just simply can change me and worry about me and worry about my family and worry about you, my fellow brethren. That's what I can do. If I have to worry about trying to change things, or why is this happening to me, good or bad? We don't often say, why is this happening to me when I just won the lottery? Or what, you know, when I just got a bonus from work. Why is this happening to me? We don't often say that, right? But both should be the case. Why are all these things happening to me? Good, bad, in between? God. That's it. Okay? But especially in the bad, if I worry about it, where's that going to get me? Why is this happening to me? Is that going to get me in a better place? No. But again, said it a billion times. Easy to say, super hard to do, or harder to do. Okay? Any other thoughts before we close? And that goes right into this, doesn't it? You're not going to be slow to anger. You're not going to be patient in spirit. You're just going to, this idea of just go, go, go. I'm going to get what I can get. Yep. Thank y'all so much for your thoughts this morning. We will pick up in verse 14. We'll cover through the end of chapter 7 next week. And if we get into a little bit of chapter 8, then we'll do that as well. Thank you so much.